This is the KOTO Community Radio News for Friday, March 8th. I'm Gavin McGough. In today's headlines, Telluride Airport can expand. Radio Book Club has the next chapter. New class lives for the drama and a mountain weather forecast. But first, the National Federation of Community Broadcasters has confirmed KOTO is one of only a handful of non-underwritten, non-commercial public radio stations left in our country today. Donate during our winter fund drive to help us stay independent and community-driven for the people of this canyon and beyond. The Telluride Airport wants to build a new hangar.
It's a 40,000 square foot building. It would include a lobby and office, rental car service, and storage.
That's John Huebner, planning director for San Miguel County, speaking this week before the Board of County Commissioners. When the airport came forward with their proposed new hangar, the county informed them they'd have to go through some steps.
And the first was that it would need to update its airport master plan document.
The airport did so, drawing up a master plan update, which includes not only the new hangar building, but also rearranged parking and rental car facilities, storage space for privately owned aircraft, a new terminal building, and a secondary access route onto Last Dollar Road. Originally, the airport proposed adding a small hotel, a fire training facility with a tower, and hangars to the south of the runway, where it's currently open space. All those items proved controversial with both the public and with county officials. They were struck from the plan. Kenneth Mampa, the airport's manager, notes they're not trying to expand or serve more customers. Over the past few years,
we've reached that magical threshold that I always talk about. With anyone that will listen to me, that we're real. Our target is really to get those 10,000 employments, because that opens up the door for other federally eligible projects to continue to enhance the safety and the capacity of the airport.
Crossing that threshold into 10,000 employments, industry lingo for passengers served, is no record for the Telluride Regional Airport.
In 1994, where we had 27,000 employments, and that was three airlines that were operating at that time.
Mampa notes now that the Montrose facility is so robust, Telluride does not expect to see that level of traffic again. Instead, they focus on a more niche market. Part of that niche, private jet owners who want to dip down into Telluride and ski for a weekend. This brings up the new hangar. Currently, those jets have nowhere to park at TEX, so they have to drop off their passengers and, again, take flight to park elsewhere. It's not ideal.
People are coming in, they're dropping off their guests, and then they ask us, do you have hangar space available? Sorry, we don't have any hangar space. So then they take off, they load up, take off, and go to another airport where they await when their guests are ready to leave. So then they come back and then take off. So that's six operations. That's just completely unnecessary.
Offering those jets a place to park here in Telluride would reduce emissions and air traffic significantly. The airport's proposed expansions have raised some skepticism. What's the benefit exactly of supporting all these private jet setters? But, says Commissioner Ann Brown,
I have kind of changed my mind through this conversation, reviewing all the past documents, that I really do believe there is a public benefit to this enlarged hangar, given what you've been able to show in terms of the number of operations that would be reduced, not only in terms of greenhouse gases, but just traffic like coming in and out of our skies. So I do perceive that as a public benefit.
The commissioners unanimously clear the airport's plan for takeoff. They do say, however, the airport must make efforts to support workforce housing in the Telluride region, vigorously pursue renewable energy, and partner with SMART to reduce their traffic impacts. Arm doors and cross check for takeoff.
Paperback Writers.
We're turning the page into a new month, and it's time for another rendition of our Radio Book Club. Joining us for the March installment is Evan McMillan, one of the trusty shopkeepers at the Between the Covers bookstore. His most memorable read in February, The Adventures of Amina Al-Sarafi by Shannon Chakraborty, which was released in March 2023. It's a pirate thriller with a quote-unquote one last job plot.
So it is set in Middle Ages in the Indian Ocean. It starts in what is today Yemen. And it's about this woman named Amina Al-Sarafi, who was a legendary pirate captain in her youth. She's since had a daughter and she's retired, trying to take care of her daughter and make ends meet, not attract too much attention to herself. But she gets dragged in for one last big adventure. This book, I'd say, is for people who like exciting adventure stories. It was very like Pirates of the Caribbean. That was sort of those movies were a similar vein where they're set on Earth, but with fantasy elements. I'd say if you're not a fan of fantasy and historical fiction, you probably won't enjoy this book. This is historical fantasy, so it's set on Earth during a period of Earth's history, but there are fantastical creatures and magical elements to it. The cover's beautiful. It's got this ship being ripped apart by a kraken on it. And Amina's a really great character. She's balancing this love for her daughter with her love of adventure. Sort of a unique fantasy protagonist, being an older woman who is a mother, but who isn't completely defined by her child. She's her own person, and that's the balance that she has to strike in this story.
You mentioned this book is underrated, in your opinion. Do you think it could still have its moment in the sun?
I think so. It's the first book of a planned trilogy, so perhaps as the next books come out, it'll get a little more recognition, but I think it stands alone on it by itself.
What's it like working at the bookstore and chatting with people about books all day?
Well, there's the questions about parking and that sort of thing, of course.
Coffee.
Yeah. But yeah, I get to recommend a lot of books to people. It's really fun. You know, a lot of conversations kind of like this. I really enjoy trying to sell people on books I've read that maybe they wouldn't discover otherwise.
Try something new.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. All right, is there anything else you'd like to add today?
Come by Between the Covers if you want to chat about books.
That was Evan McMillan discussing The Adventures of Amina Al-Sarafi, his favorite read from the past month. McMillan will pass the baton to another avid reader who will join us come April. A new theater class in Telluride isn't about rehearsing for the stage, it's about rehearsing for life. KOTO's Julia Caulfield has more.
There's the butterfly! Stay with me!
There's the butterfly!
Children's voices ricochet off the walls of the Telluride Elementary School cafeteria. Bodies fly to the ground in search of an exquisite butterfly.
Drama Kids is an international program, so it's all over the country, and it's really education-based.
That's Sam Finger. She's a local theater practitioner and leads Drama Kids in Telluride, which started last fall.
It's really just about helping kids with self-confidence and self-esteem using theater activities.
On this particular Thursday, parents are in class as well for a presentation day. Finger starts the class with warm-up exercises. There's improv games.
I encourage you guys to really be there the whole time. Flap your wings, yeah? And think about your baby bird characters. Are you excited? Are you nervous? For your first flight.
And practice with theater skills.
We'll work on skills like projection, articulation, work on jaw exercises, lip and tongue exercises. And there's usually lines that go with that.
Ready, say it with me.
Finger is an actor herself. She grew up in Telluride, participated in Mudbutts, Young People's Theater, and high school performances. She got a degree in acting before coming back to the San Juans.
Before all of the acting, I always was interested in social work or helping kids in different stages of development. And I kind of made the connection that theater can act as that outlet or that catharsis for kids.
Her work in theater is, in part, built on her own experience on the stage.
Growing up, I had a lot of learning disabilities and was just painfully shy that I would get on stage and that would all just kind of crumble and disintegrate. And I think because of all of that exposure, it was like exposure therapy in a way, just being able to perform, I grew stronger because of that.
Look at this fun slide we can go on.
Ooh, I want to go after you.
Forefinger, Drama Kids isn't about finding the star. It's about giving every child a chance to shine.
Hopefully, I think it also builds just kinder people. Because a lot of these activities can be embarrassing, quote unquote, right? But it gives them the setting to be big and weird and silly and to get validated for that in front of their peers, too.
Currently, Drama Kids is an after-school program for students 5 to 10, but Finger hopes to expand from preschool through high school. Parents interested in having their children participate in Drama Kids can reach out to dramakidsoftelluride@gmail.com.
A first harbinger of spring is upon us. Not a natural phenomenon, but a timely one. This Sunday, March 10th, marks the beginning of daylight savings time, so make sure to spring forward and set clocks an hour ahead. Moving into spring, the time change will postpone the morning sunrise in favor of longer evenings. This year, daylight savings runs through November 3rd. So while you might lose an hour of sleep this Sunday, you'll have plenty of time to adjust. The San Miguel County Democrats are caucusing tomorrow, March 9th, at the Wilkinson Public Library. The caucus will take place at 1 p.m. and the floor will be open for any registered county Democrat to speak in favor of a candidate. Following the forum, participants can cast a vote. There is a contested race for San Miguel County Commissioner in District 1, with both Ann Brown and Geneva Chanette vying for the seat. Each must receive a portion of votes at the caucus in order to appear on the party's primary ballot in June. The San Miguel County Republicans are holding their caucus and assembly this very evening, Friday, March 8th, at the Norwood Community Center. Kicking off at 6 p.m., it is probably underway at this very moment. 69.2 inches. That's the depth of snow that fell in Telluride this February. That's nearly 2 inches above average, and it's the highest accumulation of any February going back 11 years, with the exception of 2019, which was a memorably robust year for snow, when Telluride saw 70 inches in the month. Are you surprised? Telluride Ski Patrol, which compiles the report with data from its mountaintop weather stations, notes that grand snowfall total was not always reflected in ski conditions. The vast majority of snow fell in the first 10 days of the month, so the good skiing was concentrated. It was followed by a long dry spell. In addition, the last storms have been affected by high wind, which can sublimate snow, scour slopes, and leave skiers chasing pow in the lurch. According to the latest state data, snowpack levels across Colorado are relatively on average for this time of year. In the San Miguel Basin, we're just slightly below. While the news may matter to skiers, it of course matters to water watchers, as Colorado snowpack determines water availability across a thirsty West. A bill to reintroduce wolverines to Colorado has been proposed at the state capitol. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, Carolyn Giannis of Aspen Public Radio has more.
Wolverines are native to Colorado, with their historic range stretching from the Sierra Nevada in California all the way to the Rocky Mountains. According to Colorado Parks and Wildlife, the species was wiped out in Colorado in the 1900s due to unregulated hunting and widespread carnivore poisoning. Wolverines are considered threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act, and there are estimated to be fewer than 400 in the contiguous United States. Republican State Senator Perry Will of Newcastle is sponsoring the bill. In a statement, he wrote that Colorado has great unoccupied wolverine habitat, and he's excited to support the species across the western United States with this bill. Caroline Yanez, Aspen Public Radio News.
The Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance has been seeking information from the Bureau of Land Management about a limestone quarry near Glenwood Springs. However, the BLM has been less than forthcoming in responding to their requests. The group is opposed to the expansion of the mine. They filed a lawsuit in February to get the agency to release the documents. For Rocky Mountain Community Radio, KDNK's Amy Haddon Marsh has an update.
Redactions. You know, those heavy black lines through a document that looks like someone took a Sharpie to it. That's the problem the Glenwood Springs Citizens Alliance is facing with the Bureau of Land Management. The group began filing Freedom of Information Act, or FOIA, requests to the agency in 2018.
We began that year filing what became a series of Freedom of Information Act requests to the BLM, seeking some documents that related to mine operations, limestone sales, and BLM's permit enforcement actions.
Heather McGregor is vice president of the Citizens Alliance Board of Directors. The limestone quarry she's talking about sits above Glenwood Springs, well within sight of the Glenwood Caverns Adventure Park. It was purchased by Rocky Mountain Industrials, or RMI, in 2016 and has been plagued with permit violations and litigation since 2018, plus a major rock slide in early 2023. McGregor told KDNK that the FOIA requests began after RMI announced a planned 321-acre expansion in 2018. At first, she said, it looked like the BLM was responding. The agency sent the group thousands of pages of documents.
What we noticed right off the bat was that many of those documents, or parts of those documents, were blacked out, or what they call redactions. So we filed appeals to those redactions, seeking to know what more information was being hidden behind those blacked out sections.
Basically, the issue is that even though the BLM sent the requested information, it was essentially meaningless due to the heavy redactions. The group filed three separate FOIA requests in 2018, 2019, and 2022, and three appeals. But, says McGregor, those appeals have gone unanswered.
We've gone through the required hoops, and we're just being met with silence.
Hence, a lawsuit. Another lawsuit, in fact. The Citizens Alliance first sued the BLM in 2020 about permit enforcement issues, charging the agency with failing to properly regulate mining activity. But the previous year, RMI sued Garfield County in state and federal courts instead of complying with a county permit violation. But back to the current FOIA suit. Ellen Dole, a retired U.S. Housing and Urban Development attorney, is also on the Citizens Alliance board.
FOIA requests are very specific, and the agency has certain obligations in their review of the FOIA request to comply specifically with the standards for FOIA. And that's why we filed this lawsuit, because we don't feel that they follow those requirements of the federal statute.
The group is asking for more intact pages, explanations of any exemptions, access to information that does not fall under an exemption, and assurance that a full document search has been completed.
Unless we understand what's going on there, what the plans are, what BLM knows, what RMI is proposing to do, how they've been using the property, we can't make informed judgments to protect our community. And so the whole point of FOIA is to allow us to know what's going on. And by redacting those documents, by not releasing them, by not being fully open and transparent, which is the whole goal of FOIA, we can't do that.
More information about the quarry's history, including litigation and more, is at loveglenwood.org. For KDNK News, I'm Amy Haddon Marsh.
The National Weather Service forecast for the Western San Juans calls for a chance of snow tonight, ending early and followed by cloudy skies with a low around 15 degrees. Saturday, expect sunny skies and a high near 35, followed by a mostly clear night with a low around 15 degrees. Expect sun again on Sunday with a high near 40, followed by a partly cloudy night with a low around 20 degrees. This has been the news for Friday, March 8th. Thanks for listening. If you have a story idea or a news tip, call the news team at 970-728-3206. We would like to thank everyone who has donated to CODO during our winter fundraising drive. Today, we offer a special thanks to John Adler, Baba Louie and Peggy Lee Redford, Sam Anderson, Andreas Andrew, Lisa Ann Andrews, Helen Ballard, Adam Baker, Chris Barnum, Stephen Barrett, Andrew Bick, Jody Borziller, Tammy Brand, Sharon Brody, Kimberly Bunch, Andrew Calcutt, Michelle Karstensen, Jen Cordova, Lisa Coe, Ashley Pressinger Dahl, Jasper Daniel, Dan Dockray, Don and Jane Berman, Irma J. Dressy, Grace and Paul Engbring, Wayne Finke, Patricia Flournoy, and Robert Flournoy. Thank you all so much.